Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. What do we really know about marijuana? Kevin Hill, a psychiatrist and addiction expert, says way too little. And he says that's a big problem because marijuana use is on the rise and the debate over legalization has never been hotter. Recreational use is now legal in 4 states, and there's a push to make it legal here in Massachusetts as well.
Meanwhile, this state is among 24 that have already legalized the sale and use of medical marijuana. But Hill argues there's an abundance of misinformation about the weed, about addiction, about its effects on the brain, and about how it could be or should be regulated.
He says if you think pot is a pleasant high with minimal risks, the truth is marijuana addiction is real and that use by adolescents can damage the developing brain.
But he also says if you think marijuana is an evil drug that leads people down the path of moral degradation, the truth is pot offers many potential medical benefits.
Kevin Hill is a clinical researcher at Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont and author of a new book which will be out at the end of the month. It's called Marijuana, the Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed, and he's with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And one of the basic premises of this book is that there's just this huge amount of misinformation about marijuana. And my question is, why is that, given that we've been talking about it, debating it, smoking it, arguing about it for such a long time? Why is there so much misinformation out there?
Well, there's a battle going on right now for marijuana in the country, and there are passionate people on both sides of this debate. And I think, however, in order to be successful clinically and from a policy perspective, you have to understand that the truth about marijuana is somewhere in the middle. So clinically, for example, if a 17-year-old kid comes into me smoking marijuana every day, I need to take time to understand why they're doing that as opposed to hammering them for reasons why they shouldn't be doing it if I'm going to get anywhere. And I think from a policy perspective, what we have right now is we have the pro side and the anti side sort of digging their heels in without any sort of compromise and rolling the dice in state after state for medical marijuana and legalization of marijuana. And the result is usually regulations that just don't work.
Hmm. Well, we're going to talk about a bunch of that as we sort through this conversation. But I want to ask you about this one thing you write that is really intriguing. You write that the use of marijuana among young people is on the rise while the perception of risk is declining. And that troubles you.
It troubles me, absolutely. So you're talking about a survey that's done every year out of the University of Michigan. It's called Monitoring the Future. And they show that marijuana is like any other drug at this point for young people. So the use is on the rise. So nicotine use, for example, among young people is on a steep decline. Alcohol use has flatlined. As I like to say, it's as dangerous as ever. But marijuana use continues to trickle upward. And as you mentioned, while use is increasing, their perception of risk, perhaps because of issues like medical marijuana, legalization of marijuana, or whatever our artists and athletes are doing these days, the perception of risk is on the decline. Therefore, I think we're in a very difficult position where if things don't change, if we don't change the way that we're educating people about marijuana, it's hard to imagine that things won't get worse before they get better.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the misinformation that you identify and about myths around marijuana. But first, I want to invite listeners into this conversation as the state moves closer to full legalization of pot. What questions do we still need to answer about this drug? Do you feel that you know enough about it to support or oppose legal recreational use? What questions do you have for Dr. Kevin Hill? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So I want to talk about some of the major myths about marijuana that you seek to debunk in your book. Myth number one, marijuana is not harmful.
Well, so the data is quite clear for especially the group of people whose brains are still developing. So we're talking 25 and under. So for that group in particular, early regular use, so nearly daily use, leads to cognitive difficulties. So you can have up to an 8-point decline in IQ over time if you're using marijuana regularly. Certainly, anxiety can be worse if you're using marijuana regularly, worsening depression. And then you're more likely to express psychotic disorders. So if you have a genetic predisposition towards psychotic disorders like schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, or bipolar disorder, you're more likely to express that if you begin using marijuana at a young age.
I'm interested in a lot of that, particularly what you said about anxiety, that marijuana can actually increase anxiety, because I think a lot of folks are live with the impression that marijuana can reduce anxiety.
I see a lot of those folks, let me tell you. I think anxiety is one of the top three reasons that people tell me that they use marijuana. And unfortunately, there are a lot of things about marijuana that are not intuitive, and the anxiety piece is one of them. Certainly, if you're anxious and you use marijuana, while you're feeling the effects of the marijuana, you're going to feel less anxious. The problem is that the marijuana wears off eventually. And when that happens, your anxiety level usually rebounds or goes back up. And over time, if you continue to try to medicate your anxiety that way, your baseline level of anxiety actually increases. So using marijuana is not a good long-term strategy for treating anxiety.
All right. Myth number two, marijuana use cannot lead to addiction.
So I would invite people to come and sit with me every day. I see patients every day who are using marijuana to the detriment of multiple areas of their lives. So work, school, and relationship. These are people who are smoking every day, multiple times a day, often before they go to work or school. So again, I understand the majority of people who use marijuana don't become addicted. It's about, more than 9 out of 10 don't. But for some people, it's very addictive, and they have very serious problems that essentially can get their lives off track.
Mm. Well, let me ask you about those problems, because I think, again, and this may be sort of fall under the myth category, but someone might ask, people die of heroin overdoses, cocaine overdoses. We hear daily about the dangers of the opioid addiction crisis. But let's say someone is addicted to marijuana. It doesn't kill them. So what's the problem?
Well, there are different ways to measure harm. So certainly I agree. The opioid epidemic is a terrible problem. People are dying every day. So marijuana is probably not as bad as opioids. Marijuana is probably not as bad as alcohol. However, if marijuana is not as bad as these other drugs, doesn't mean that it's not dangerous. And I think that's something that we need to recognize. So the ways in which marijuana can be harmful are different, but it still can be harmful.
Mm. I want to ask you about another thing, and that is the marijuana that's out there on the market today. Very different brand of weed, I guess, than, say, the weed that was widely available a generation ago or
sure.
two generations ago?
Absolutely. So that's one of the reasons why people are misguided by their own experiences. So frequently I'll have young people come in to see me, and their parents will say, well, we knew that Johnny was using marijuana in his room at night, but we were thinking, well, it's not as bad as using OxyContin. So I get that. The problem is, as you allude to, that the marijuana that they may have had experience with in the 60s, 70s, or 80s is nothing like the marijuana that's available today. 60s, 70s, 80s, average THC, or the active ingredient in marijuana, was 1-2%. Now it's 13% and climbing. You can actually get the plant itself with THC content in the low 30s. So again, it's a very different thing.
I want to ask you about your motivation to write this book. And again, it's called Marijuana, the Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. But then in the preface, you do say, I admittedly come to this topic with somewhat of a biased perspective. Addiction is a part of all my days. And you write very openly about the death of your grandfather, who was addicted to alcohol, and of an uncle who suffered from alcoholism and depression and committed suicide by jumping out of a 13-story building. So my question is, are you really unbiased about this, given that history that you're very open about disclosing?
I'd say so. I think I'm as unbiased as you can be in this situation, given what I do and sort of where I've been. I have to admit, I think, the difference between me and some other people that are interested in this topic is that I'm data-driven. So I take a sensible approach. So I test hypotheses and I make clinical decisions based upon what the research shows, and we could talk about how that is. I think, unfortunately, at this point, again, this is a polarizing topic, and I think you have these very emotional groups that have political agendas, and I think at this point, a lot of times, if they're faced with game-changing data, they're either unwilling or unable to recognize this data, and as a result, you're not willing to compromise, and you have regulations that don't work. We've seen that play out in state after state.
Listeners, we're talking to Dr. Kevin P. Hill. He is an addiction expert, works at McLean Hospital, Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont. His forthcoming book is called Marijuana, the Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. And we'd love to have you chime in on this conversation. What are your questions, your comments about what you're hearing? 1-800-423-8255. That's the number to call. So let's talk about legalization of recreational marijuana, which here in Massachusetts, it will very likely be on the ballot in 2016. And just this week, we heard from legislators on Beacon Hill who want to do their own push to legalize pot as a way to get out in front of a possible ballot initiative. So it's in the news. You're not opposed to recreational legalization. And given some of the dangers that you just talked about, why?
Well, I think you should be able to do it. So again, I think the American way is to be able to make choices about how you live your life. And some things that we choose to do are dangerous or risky. And I think that within reason, you should be able to make those kind of decisions every day. I also think that it's important to recognize, as you mentioned, most people want this. Mm-hmm. So I would rather come from a premise where we're going to think about ways to regulate this, to make regulations that work while mitigating risk, rather than saying no, 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 or yes, 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 and then ending up with regulations that don't work. So again, the train's left the station, and I'd rather operate from a more practical perspective to try to figure out how we can do this. This is a complex issue. It's going to take a lot of work, but I think it can be done, and I think it should be done.
Hmm. Well, there's some political forces in this state are arrayed against legalization. Governor Charlie Baker, who's talked about making the opioid addiction crisis sort of top priority, is against it. So is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. And here's Attorney General Maura Healey talking last October about why she opposes legalization of recreational marijuana.
We've got to see what's happening out in Colorado and Washington State. We've already seen some of the trouble with legalization out there. I support what's happened here in Massachusetts and in the legalization to date, but I don't support full decriminalization of marijuana in any amount.
So what about that? What about an argument, you know, let's wait a little bit. There's only, three or four other states that have done this. Let's wait and see how it goes before we all sort of put our support behind it.
Well, I agree with that. I think the timing is critical. I would like to have certain things ironed out. For example, I'd like to see more data available for the driving risks. So right now, we don't have the 0.08 blood alcohol content equivalent with marijuana. We don't have the technology to test for it. There is a breathalyzer, at least one company trying to develop that. So there are things I would like to see in place before we do that. However, we've been talking about legalization now for a couple of years, and I've invited people on various sides to participate in trying to do some of the research to get some of those answers. So I would rather move forward, try to get some of these answers, and if we have those answers, you know, I think we should move forward. But I'm certainly not in favor of rushing forward to do it. However, an important difference is I would like to look at states like Colorado and the mistakes that they've made and say, hey, we can do this better. Just because people are having problems with it or have made mistakes doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to do something that's worth doing.
I don't want to get too off the track and talk too much about Colorado, but I did want to ask you about that. What have we learned from Colorado? You talked about mistakes. What's sort of the top one or two mistakes that they've made out there?
Well, I think just the way that they went about doing it. So if you're not set up to do it, if you don't have the infrastructure in place to collect data, for example, about addiction or about how the taxes will work and what kind of revenues will be gained, then I think you're behind the eight ball, so to speak. And like I said, I think the driving issue is key. A lot more people will probably be using marijuana if it becomes available legally in the recreational form. And so I would like to see us really iron out those issues. But again, as I said, I'm not expecting people to figure it out the first time, and I think just because there have been difficulties doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to put heads together in the Commonwealth and do it right.
Mm. Kevin Hill, let's take some calls. We've got a lot of listeners who want to get in on this conversation. Again, you can join this conversation about what we know, what we don't know. Kevin Hill calls his book The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Jason, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just lost a brother to a heroin overdose Sunday night.
I'm very sorry to hear that, Jason. Very sorry.
Yeah. But let me also just say that I still support, I don't know if you want to call it legalization, but something other than what we're doing. Because I capitulate to the assertion that we don't know everything that we need to know about drugs, whether it's something like marijuana or even something more deadly. But what we do know is that the promise that was made to us with the prohibition paradigm was that criminalization and prison sentences would solve this problem. And not only has it not solved the problem, addiction has increased, and we now have a second social disease of incarceration, and we know plenty about that. There are people rotting in these jails. They become criminals by being associated with violent criminals when half the time they're nonviolent when they go in. And I also think that it's economically illiterate because we know what black markets are. And then we end up with a police force 40 years later that's militarized. And I also see that they're telling us that they're protecting us from gangs, but they've actually created the black market antagonism of gangs.
Jason, I'm going to Jason, I'm going to jump in there because you put a lot on the table with a lot of passion there. And again, I want to tell you how sorry I am about your brother. But Kevin, respond to Jason's point there, just about the black market that we're talking about right now.
I don't think the black market's ever going to go away. Actually, if you legalize it or not, I think there are always going to be people that are selling it cheaper and offering a different product. However, I do agree with what the caller said. Certainly, one of the key arguments in favor of legalizing recreational marijuana is this idea that the current laws are discriminatory against certain racial and ethnic groups. And I think that the question is, does the punishment fit the crime? And we have decriminalized marijuana in 2008 in Massachusetts, and I think this would be another step towards trying to figure out a better way to handle this in terms of fitting that punishment to crime or making that situation better.
Mm. Let's go to Lori, who's calling from Carlisle. Lori, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I thank you for having Dr. Hill on. I don't think there's enough of this conversation going on. I have firsthand experience with a brother who, by his own self-report, smoked marijuana daily since he was 14. He's in his mid-40s now, very psychotic, homeless, and in fact, we've lost him and don't know where he is. Mm. And so I have a couple comments. I firmly believe that it may have some medical uses, but the conversation, as Dr. Hill said, it's sort of off base in my view. Is we could talk about sort of medicalizing the problem, taking it out of the criminal justice system and putting it into the public health system, but to have the debate between legal and non-legal based on whether it's harmful or not. Is not the right debate. There's lots of evidence out there, particularly with the growing brain, that it does lead to psychosis. I've seen it myself. And then I just want to answer your question, Anthony. You said, why is the message not getting out there? And
yeah.
I think it's because the media has found it's not sexy to talk about the dangers of marijuana. And I listened to your program a few months back where you talked about this issue, and you only had two pro-marijuana speakers. And
well, Lori, I'm really glad you brought this up because actually Dr. Hill addresses this issue. And Kevin, in your book, you talk about the media's responsibility for contributing to some of the misinformation out there. I'd love you to respond to what Lori was referring to.
I think it's very accurate. I think that most of the young people in particular get their information from, again, the arts, whether it's music, sports, little bits and pieces online, and we need to do a better job of educating them. I'm in the schools. I'm official community partner of the Boston Public Schools, and I'm in schools all over the Commonwealth. And I know firsthand that these kids feel that marijuana is not a big deal, that it's harmless. And my message to them is that it absolutely can be very harmful for them. And my message for, again, people under 25 is that marijuana can be harmful. It can be addictive. The problem is, of course, if a bunch of kids who are 15 start using marijuana, we can't really predict which ones will go on to have the more serious problems that we're worried about. So I think the message needs to be loud and clear that for young people, they should stay away from marijuana.
Well, Lori, thank you for that call and great points that you raised. Let's go to Patricia, who's calling from Andover. I think we've got time for one more call. Patricia, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I've actually become obsessed with the legalization of marijuana. My daughter, who's 25, has been very sick, and it has actually helped her a lot with her pain management and her sleep. I've read the POT book by Dr. Holland, a psychiatrist who was from Framingham, and now she's in New York. I went to Grassroots. I took a medical marijuana class in Quincy. And I just want people, like, we feel like we're living in the shadows. We haven't had the dispensaries opened yet. And it actually has been so helpful for my daughter and her management of her pain.
Well, Patricia, I'm really glad you brought this up because this is where I wanted to take the conversation with Kevin Hill. And that is, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about medical marijuana. As Patricia said there, we still don't have dispensaries open in Massachusetts. But what do we really know about the potential benefits of medical marijuana.
So a couple things. In terms of medical marijuana in Massachusetts, there are very few people that are happy with medical marijuana in Massachusetts. I think if you went over to Boston Common and you were looking around for somebody who was satisfied with the current state of medical marijuana in Massachusetts, you'd be looking for quite a long time. The regulations are weak, certainly. However, it's important to note that there is some evidence for the use of marijuana and cannabinoids. So the marijuana plant has over 60 cannabinoids, and so those cannabinoids can be used in a variety of ways. We have two FDA-approved cannabinoids, and therefore nausea and vomiting associated with cancer chemotherapy and appetite stimulation and wasting illnesses. And there is data to suggest a few more indications. So that would be chronic pain, neuropathic pain, and then spasticity associated with multiple sclerosis. So the landscape is changing. It's very likely that we will have additional cannabinoids available from the FDA in terms of FDA approval within the next few years. So I think it's somewhat simplistic to say that medical marijuana is entirely a sham. That's not the case. I think, unfortunately, the way the regulations are written, the result of those regulations is that a lot of people who are using medical marijuana are not using it for the reasons that people voted for. They're not using it for the debilitating conditions that everyone was interested in preserving the right to use it for.
I have a final question for you. You know, we began this interview talking about the huge amount of misinformation that's out there about marijuana. But as Massachusetts and other states engage in this debate for full legalization, is there any reason to believe or to be hopeful that within the course of that debate, people will become better informed?
I'm very hopeful. I wouldn't be here if I didn't think that it would make a difference. What I'm trying to do is elevate the level of discussion. As I mentioned before, a lot of people see this as a black or white issue. It's not that. You have to be comfortable in the middle with marijuana. The truth is in the middle there. And I do know that having, you know, been to many schools and giving talks to a lot of healthcare professionals and organizations that see this as an issue, that people learn and people are able to make changes. We need to do a better job of reaching those people, and that's what the book's about.
All right. Well, the book is called Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. It's coming out at the end of the month. Kevin Hill is a clinical researcher at Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont. Dr. Hill, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Listeners, you can post your comments about this if you didn't get a chance to make your comment on the air at radioboston.org. In the meantime, stay with us. Coming up, City Councilor Michelle Wu on her effort to give city workers paid maternity leave. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.